Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is writer and novelist Jenna Howard. Howard spent 27 years as a high school English teacher. Her first novel, Night Navigation, was released in 2009 and was named a New York Times Book Review Editor's Choice. Her second novel, Doing Time Outside, was published in August of this year by Standing Stone Books. Both novels, which are part of a trilogy, deal with mental illness, addiction, and how these issues affect families in small-town communities. Howard received a Media Award from the National Alliance on Mental Illness of New York State for her work on behalf of those with mental illness and their families. The final novel of this trilogy, Rope and Bone, a novel in stories, will be published next year. And welcome to the show.
It's good to be here.
Now, I have a particular question that I must ask you, having read both of your previous, this novel and the one before. They both deal with mental illness. They both deal with addiction. This one deals with incarceration. What got you interested in these subjects?
I never really think about them that way. In other words, I never have anything I want to say. I don't have any message. I do have, in my experiences, particularly for Night Navigation, some of that is drawn from my own family experience. But this story, this novel, Doing Time Outside, is really imagined. I always am working from something real way, way back when. So I actually knew some people who inspired the characters in Doing Time Outside. I was trying to think about this. I was coming here about 25 years ago. And of course, these characters appear in Night Navigation. It's a different world. It's a slightly different world. They're both upstate. But and so I already, when I started to write this novel, because I wrote Rope and Bone, which hasn't been published yet, but I wrote that first, I have known these characters, Rudy, one of the main characters, I've known since he was three in my imagination.
Uh-huh.
And Tess, who's another one of the sister in the family, I've known in utero. In other words, I knew her when Carla was thinking of having an abortion. I have a story in Rope and Bone all about her trying to make the decision, you know, whether she should have an abortion.
Wow.
So it comes from, you know, I'm sure I'm always emotionally connected in some way. So because I do have some of those issues in my family, I'm sure that that's what brought me there in the first place. But again, I'm never writing to show that or to, you know, it's just that's the story.
Yeah. I understand that. Well, let's talk a little bit about Doing Time Outside. It centers around 35-year-old Rudy, and tell us about him. He's been in trouble.
Rudy has. You know, he's a guy that was out on the road selling T-shirts for Grateful Dead. You know, he comes from that world. He comes from a very creative family, back roads, rural, had dyslexia, so didn't do very well in school kind of thing. He's probably been drug involved like a lot of kids of that world, smoking marijuana when he was very young kind of thing. This is his third arrest, but you have to tune in to see what that all means. But certainly for the family, it means that they are good and sick of the troubles that Rudy has brought, you know, to the family. And I thought that's what the novel was going to be about, was a trouble that he brought to the mother and the sister.
Mm-hmm.
But Rudy unexpectedly does something so amazing in the book that comes out of nowhere for me, which is the thrill of writing fiction, that I became so sympathetic with him. Not that I meant, and so we all live happily ever after, and he shaped up, and that was it. But I just came, I didn't think I'd work in his point of view. I always work in multiple points of view.
Yes,
that's kind
you
of
do.
Characteristic of my writing. And that's because I want everyone to get a chance to tell their side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And they're short chapters, and we go from one. And the other amazing person who showed up was the grandmother. And that's who Rudy does the wonderful thing for.
You know, that grandmother is fascinating. Her name is Angela, and she comes to stay with Rudy's mother and sister.
It's Carla's mother.
Right.
Yeah.
After having cancer treatment. Well, why did you put cancer treatment into this?
Nothing. A throwaway line. I need, you know, there was dialogue going on in the car between Carla and Tess. I needed to bring in a little new energy, so I had Carla say, oh yeah, I wanted to tell you that your grandmother, who she hasn't seen her mother in years, they're estranged when she was quite young. She ran away. Carla ran away when she was 15 and basically has never been back. And she hears from her at Christmas, but there's no real relationship going on. And so Carla says, oh yeah, I meant to tell your grandmother's going to come to our house to recuperate from chemotherapy, and Tessa's response to that is, she's coming to our house to recuperate. But what happened was, when I put that line in there, I thought, and when she became a real character, I didn't know she was going to be a character. That was just something to say in the car, in a way. You know, I hoped I hadn't let her die in Night Navigation. It wouldn't have been a scene, but Carla might have gotten a phone call or something.
Oh, yeah.
I really couldn't remember. And, of course, Angela, which I named back in Rope and Bone, because there was a story in Rope and Bone about her, you know, she is an angel. And also I could tune into the whole Catholic
thing.
She's
a toughie. Okay.
Yeah, I
She's
had a wonderful
a real
time with the Catholic thing, so I'm not Catholic myself, so.
You know what I also noticed that you were able to portray really nicely in this book is the fact that once somebody gets into drugs, gets into trouble, it is so hard to come out of it, because you come out of jail into the same communities with the same problems. To talk to us a little bit about that, did you have to do a lot of research, or was this from family?
Well, I did a lot of research, and you know, what did writers do before they could go online and they could go to YouTube? You know, there's so many things, but the average amount of times that people go to rehab is 8.
Yeah,
8.
It's incredible.
Especially if you're dual diagnosis, meaning you also have a mental illness in addition to having an addiction. And that's such a common thing. People who have mental illnesses, not to overstate this, but many people who have mental illness also have an addiction.
Yeah. And Rudy's supposed to be bipolar.
Right.
Supposedly
right.
Bipolar.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very, very interesting the way you deal with this. Very sympathetic. And it seemed very real to me.
Yeah, and I became more sympathetic as I got to know Rudy. And because I did know him when he was 3, and I was certainly very sympathetic to him then. And on. I mean, I've known him in quite a few stories earlier than this novel.
So. You know, I was talking to you before we started. This novel does seem a lot grittier than Night Navigation, even though they're some of the same characters. To tell us why you decided to make it, you know, a little bit grittier, a little bit more working class.
I didn't decide anything. You know, it's kind of that's where these people were. Years ago, I was saying to you before we started, 25 years ago, I knew some people that inspired this, and I knew them on the level of they were so exotic.
Mm.
And not to stereotype, but they were motorcycle people. They belonged to the pagans.
Uh-huh.
Carla was in the pagan auxiliary. They're from California, you know. Uh-huh. And the other family, the family in Night Navigation, the Merricks, they have a lot in common because they are both dropouts. The Merricks are of the nearing, build your own house, grow your own marijuana, mm-hmm. home burial, you know, draw your own well. And the other family, they're dropouts too. They're dropouts not wanting to be, you know, governed by certain things. So they really had some things in common. Plus the real people that it was based on were just fascinating people. They were smart. They were creative. They were kind of amazing to me as a middle-class teacher, lived down the road from me, friends with my kids kind of thing.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, this has become so much fiction. Do you know what I mean? There's like a little grain of truth there, but then my imagination just
takes it. They do seem very interesting. A little bit undereducated, but incredibly creative and intuitive.
And Tess certainly is going to make it out
of
there.
Yes, uh-huh. It certainly feels like it. Now, your title invokes the fact that families who do time when they're, you know, families do time when their family members are in trouble, right? Is that what doing time outside?
Right. I got the book opens with an epigraph, and the epigraph is written by, I actually got it from the New York State Prison Guide for Families, obviously written by a very compassionate social worker. And it explains the title, because not everyone would know what that means. And it just basically says, you know, if you have a loved one in jail, some people call this doing time outside,
mm-hmm.
because you too are in pain. And I do, having talked to people, having a child, an adult child in jail is one of the most painful things that can happen to anybody for all sorts of reasons, and especially if the person also have a mental illness, because they will often be in psychosis because of severe, there's so much stress.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, anyone who's in jail who appears to be strange gets hazed. Gets bullied and picked on because when people are psychotic, often they have a certain kind of stare.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, as somebody said, you see them coming down the street, you cross over.
Did you do research on incarceration and in families?
I have been to a jail. I mean, I have actually visited someone in jail. But For example, for the probation section, you can go online and you can get the entire probation manual, the script that the probation officer is supposed to be using when he deals with the people who are going on probation, and it is full of the most wonderful language. You're not only looking for the facts, but you're also, it's like a language playground, because it's a mixture of these hard facts, but it's also a mixture of all this archaic language that's never used before, and that's what the probation officer is saying to Rudy. And Rudy, of course, is doing a riff on it in his head at the same time, you know, making up rap songs, rhyming with these crazy words that you wouldn't, you know, are never there. It just hasn't been rewritten. So, yeah, I do a lot of research, and I do a lot of talking to people who've been there. Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't need much. You don't want too much, because then, of course, you ruin the narrative tension momentum of the book. So it's not good if you know too much.
Now, it feels like the atmosphere of your book and the landscapes is part, one of the characters in both of your books. Do you just go by where you live or where you have lived?
I have to say I have a very limited range. I never have anybody be in Paris.
Right.
But
right.
I have had New York scenes, because I had one character was a bicycle messenger, and so I have lived in New York too. I haven't lived here totally all my life, but this is the only, I have to live here. This is as much as I can handle. You know what I mean? And I live out on 100 acres. You know, the beaver pond and a back road, and
so it's akin to the landscape that you've portrayed in this book in many ways. It seems very rural, and
oh yeah,
it almost seems like the past too to me. Was it supposed to be contemporary?
Well, it's 2003, so even 2003, a lot has happened, because I notice I don't have anybody on a cell phone in this novel.
I noticed that too, yeah.
And that's because I think you look back 2003, there weren't not everybody was totally doing texting and stuff like that in 2003. That's 11 years ago, so yeah. Things have gotten much more upped. And I do live more in a less developed. That's my own experience in upstate New York.
So there's something just timeless about rural America when especially when novelists portray it. You know, in some ways things haven't changed.
Right.
In regard
right.
to the small town.
That's true. And these towns haven't gotten any bigger, because there's no employment in this part of the country. So you're not seeing a lot of new people coming in. There are no jobs.
Yeah. I know. I felt like a total outsider when I came here 14 years ago.
I'll bet, from California, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And from a big city.
Yeah. But, that would be strange.
But that's what's so lovely about these communities too. They allow people to come in. You know, even though they're established, they do let newcomers come
in. Right. I actually don't even know the communities that well, because I live out in the country, and I've always lived out in the country, pretty much. Here, I grew up in West Virginia, and then I grew up in Albany, so it isn't in a town. You know, so it isn't as though I always. This was my dream to be out in the country. It was my fantasy.
Yeah. Well, you portrayed it greatly in your book. It seemed very real to me. Now, to tell us about Tess, the daughter, Rudy's sister. She's interested in animals. She wants to be a vet tech. She got an internship at Cornell.
She was a kid who, when she was young, as I knew her in the stories that I wrote, did a lot of running away from school, had a PINS, which is persons in need of supervision, and as Carla said, that means parents in need of supervision. It's a kid who's getting into trouble, and the court is finally saying, either you get your kid to shape up, or we're going to place him in foster care. And so that's an early part of Tess. Did a few drugs, nothing too serious. But then when she was 18 years old, something like that, she went to Texas, and she was in a girl band there. She plays the piano well, that kind of thing. And then she's just come back to go to vet tech school, and for one of those good two-year programs. So.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jenna Howard. We're talking about her new novel, Doing Time Outside. Now we touched on this in the beginning. The Catholicism in this seemed pretty vivid to me. Well, why did you put that in there? It just came to you, huh?
They're Italian.
Right.
I had them be Catholic in the way back in the story that I wrote a long time ago. That's part of this first novel that's finally going to come out. It's coming out, book one is coming out after two and three. And so I needed to stick with that. And to do that, because I actually have very little experience with Catholic Church, I had to interview people who are Catholic. But you can also go on online and go to a mass, you know. And of course, it was a wonderful opportunity because Rudy, who'd never been in a church, he's only been in his church once before in his life, and that was for somebody's memorial service.
Yeah.
I mean, he just does such a riff on watching this ritual, but he sort of comes to think of it as whatever gets you through the night. He certainly understands that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting.
These people have got to be on something.
Yeah, he did. Well, Catholicism is strange. I was brought up as a Catholic.
Oh, okay.
So I thought, Jenna did a great job of portraying.
I did do a lot of research.
And my grandmother
on that.
Used to pull out the rosary beads.
Right.
And so I could identify with that.
No, I knew
that.
I had to get that right. That's one of those things you wouldn't want to make a sort of, you got to get your moon in the right part of the sky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, you have a ponytailed motorcycle riding attorney in this book, too.
Oh, right.
Where did he come from?
He is really based on somebody real. a wonderful lawyer, one of those wonderful lawyers who I saw work with someone, and he really got it, you know, but very professional. He may come up on his motorcycle, but he has his three-piece suit on and his leather, you know, attaché case.
Yeah, I met lawyers like that in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I was wondering if maybe it was somebody based on somebody real.
Yeah, really, just the right person for somebody who needed a good lawyer. And I don't want to say too much to give away the plot, but he's the right person for Rudy.
Yeah, he was. He's the right person for the reader, too. I liked him.
I really liked him. Yeah.
Now, Night Navigation and Doing Time Outside, as we've referred back to, is part of a trilogy.
Right.
And book one isn't coming out till next year. Did you plan it this
way? Not at all. I didn't
plan
to write a trilogy, first of all. I wrote a story, and then I wrote another story. I didn't start writing until I was older.
Yeah,
Not anything I ever even thought about doing. So I wrote a story, and then I wrote another story, and I went to really good writers' conferences, because I was a beginner. I was not a natural. I had students who had much more voice than I did. But something hooked me into it. And so I just kind of stayed with that off and on. So there are actually now 34 stories. You know, first there were 12 and then there were 15. And so a lot of those have been published. So a novel in stories is harder to get published.
Yeah.
And my agent just simply wasn't able to sell it back then.
Rope and Bone, the number one book of the trilogy, is it going to be a prelude?
They all stand alone. Mm. Rope and Bone covers the years 1946 to 1993,
oh.
And it's both families, and all the characters are still alive, and they all have stories. So they all have voices, the husbands, the lovers, the the kids, both the women. There's even a childhood story for Dell. So the opening are flashbacks into the pivotal moments in the two women. The two women are the main characters of that. And it flashes back to when they were growing up. So there's a childhood story, a teen story, you know, that kind of thing. And then it gets up to the present of the story, which is 1984. And it's when Dell meets Carla because Dell gets a flat tire. And she goes to Carla's house, and Carla, of course, knows how to change a tire.
I think it's very interesting to have it go back. I will be interested to see how you planned. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to go back
to
the beginning.
Well, it's how you get to
know people. Yeah,
yeah. You get to know them in the now, and then slowly over time you get to know their past.
Yeah, yeah.
So it isn't so. And because they all do absolutely stand on their own, you wouldn't have to read Night Navigation to get. It would help. I mean, it would be fun. It would.
Yeah, but they are standalone because I've read them both, and they absolutely are.
Yeah.
Now, Rope and Bone, you said, starts in 1946, deliberately after the Second World War, right?
Well,
did you do it deliberately?
I just had a good childhood story. It could be Dell's childhood story kind of thing. You know, none of this is planned. I don't plan anything, really. I usually have a first line, and that's kind of...
God, that sounds like a poet.
I even do a little of that.
I have heard that. You've mentioned before, and I know when I had you on the show a couple of years ago, we talked about the fact that you started writing late in life. Do you remember what sparked it?
Absolutely.
Tell us.
First of all, New York State started saying, the Department of English, it was a wonderful thing, this was in the 80s, and they said, how can you teach writing if you don't write yourself? And all I'd ever written were the standard literature essays, research papers, and compositions.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never even heard the word creative writing. When I was in college, it was certainly around. So a poet came to the class. He said, "You will write with the class, and you'll be sharing your work with the class." I'd never written a poem in my life, and that was very scary. And so I wrote a poem, and he wrote a wonderful thing across the top of it, which a teacher can do and make it be real. You know, it can't be fake. And I've been basically writing ever since.
Wow. Do you think if you'd been discouraged, you would have just frozen?
Oh, what's that?
If you had been discouraged by this...
I think I worked on it very hard. It was a pretty good poem. I had to share with the class. I needed to have it be fairly good because I'm the teacher kind of thing.
Yeah, but not all teachers can write creative writing.
It was a sort of, I had time. It's the first time in my life I'd ever had any time. My children were gone. And so some of what being an artist, as you well know, is having time.
Oh, absolutely. You need, people think you're wasting your time by daydreaming, but really that's where a lot of creativity
does come from. Yeah, it's about time. I'm amazed at the women who write with children crawling around like Louise Erdrich under the table. I mean, there are women who do that. I'm not one of them.
Now, you have obviously lived with all these characters for so many years. Was it hard for you to start letting them go into the world and let people judge them and, interpret them themselves? These are part of your family
now,
aren't they?
That's interesting. And I have a very hard time calling them characters.
So they are part of your family.
They are people to me. They aren't characters. And I love to do book clubs. That's my favorite thing of all to do. So, and often it's just women. Not totally. I have gone to one book club in the Ithaca area where there were men in the group too and some writers. But in general, they're women. And so you go, and the book is really no longer yours, in a sense, because you can't pipe up and say, "No, that's not true," kind of thing. And there'll be characters that are controversial. And then half the group will, "How can that woman live with that guy?" kind of thing. And the other half will say, "Oh, no, don't you see that such and such?" Or one of the ones that just recently came up was a woman said, "But Carla is so abusive and doesn't seem to love her children."
Oh, I didn't get that.
So I couldn't say that. But immediately half the people spoke up and said, "Oh, no, that's not the way it is. And then this is just self-preservation. And half of it's all talk."
And she's a toughie,
I
mean, she had to survive.
I think what you see, and this is about all of us as readers, how much you bring to the book of your own view of the world your own experience. And so if you never, Carla is tricky. I mean, she is very, sometimes she's pretty hard.
But
I think you always know that it's just to try to get through it.
Yeah, I felt her as being very sympathetic. And what's more, it made her real. Through all this stuff in her life.
After all, the grandmother who loves Rudy and doesn't see a lot of these things, as the mother said, "Well, you haven't been getting the calls in the night over the last 20 years.
Exactly. Now, how important is it to you as an author to be able to give readings in front of live audiences? Does that help you?
I like doing that because I think my books are really good out loud. I'm not sure that all books are, but I would say that the most important thing to me when I talk about writing is rhythm and language. And I've told this story before, but I had my own shoe skates.
Oh, yeah.
In my own tin box, kind of thing. I went every Saturday. They used to play organ music. I'm great on the turns. And I love to dance. I mean, we always come to the Grassroots Festival over here every year. And so for me, not that I ever want to write. I never really am saying, "Oh, I can't wait to get in there and get started," especially if it's a blank screen. But it's the rhythm of the language that I love, So I like doing the readings because I think this stuff is good out loud.
It is. And I've heard you read. You're a good reader.
You have to do, unless you're a very well-known writer, if you want to sell any books, you got to do a lot of things. Houghton Mifflin Harcourt was nice because they do a lot of things for you, but they don't arrange your... I didn't get a book tour.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
do you ever start reading before it's been published and then go back and change things based on people's...
You mean out... No,
out loud in front of audiences?
In a critique group.
I'm always
in a critique group.
So you find that very important?
I find it important and I find it painful. It's sort of like going to your child's teacher for the meeting and the teacher tells you your kid isn't doing very well. It's hard to hear. But it's really important. And it's important on the level only of hearing it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And I don't want them to tell me anything else, basically. I don't want them to tell me how to fix it.
But how do you know they're always right?
I know some writers who... It's a little like Al-Anon, take what you like and leave it.
Okay, because I know some writers who, when they're getting ready for the thing to really come to life, they step away from the group because they don't want any more.
I never take anything to the writing group that I have. I feel like I've done absolutely everything I can do with it. I would never take anything raw there. Do you know what I mean? I'm not taking a rough draft.
Yeah.
I revise as I go. Writers who say, oh, just write the book and at the end you can fix it. Well, that wouldn't be true for me because I'm making the world as I go.
Ah.
In other words, if I didn't take time messing with this, then that wouldn't be there. And it might be a central metaphor that just came out of nowhere, like the bats in Night Navigation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Say, if I just written straight through, well, we wouldn't have any bats. You know, and I think the bats are really important.
So do you have to map out time in your day to write, or do you just wait until you get inspired? I mean, how do you work?
No, I don't wait until I get inspired. I don't get inspired.
You don't get inspired?
You get inspired while you're writing, when something happens out of nowhere that's completely unexpected, like when Angela, the grandmother, shows up. I mean, that was such a boost. But when I'm really writing a novel, because a novel is very long and it takes me at least 2 or 3 years to write a novel. And I usually go in every morning and work for 3 or 4 hours. And it's not because it's therapeutic. What's therapeutic is doing something for 3 or 4 hours in a very structured way. I could be doing anything. It would give me the same. Do you know what I mean?
I
don't find writing cathartic.
You find
not
it difficult?
About that. Uh-huh. No, it's material by then.
Oh, that's really interesting to me.
I've already done the other stuff in counseling and...
how important is it for you to present it to an editor, though? Do you have a final editor?
When you are with a big press, you do have an editor. And Night Navigation was very much longer. I think it was 142,000 words, and it got cut down to 97,000 words.
Wow.
So a lot was cut, and it was one of these things. A lot of what was cut was good, because it was slowing down the forward. I had a lot of journals from one of the characters. I had a lot of italicized. The woman was an artist, and she was thinking of installations and about people not being able to communicate. She had me cut all that out, and she was absolutely right. But she also wanted me to cut out things that weren't right. And so it was a wonderful thing when she called me up and told me that and hadn't quite bought the book, for me to say to her, I'm not doing that.
Mm.
And I meant that. I mean, I wasn't going to have the book published if that section couldn't be there.
Wow.
And that's good to know.
Yeah.
And I guess it's good for anybody to know that, because later as I got to talk to her about it, she said, well, I tell the writer 3 times what I think ought to go, and if on the 3rd one they're still holding their ground, then I give up.
Well, Jenna Howard, we're almost out of time. Rope and Bone is coming out next year. What next? Are you working on anything new?
I hope to start this winter writing again, because I've been promoting this book now. That's all I've been doing. You know, I'm on the internet doing emails and doing readings and so on and so forth. So my goal is we go to Florida in the winter, and my goal is to start writing, and I want to write short things, little prose poems maybe, flash fiction, sprints, whatever you want to call
it.
Wow,
interesting.
Because I need to start writing again.
Can you give some contact information, website?
www.jennahoward.com.
And spell that for them.
G as in girl, I-N-N as in Nancy, A-H, Howard, all one word, .com, and it's a wonderful site.
Yes, it is indeed. Well, Jenna Howard, thank you so much for joining us. Again, the book is called Doing Time Outside. Thank you so much for joining us.
I enjoyed it.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.